Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Sunday, December 19th, 2010. I'm Sam Minter, Yvonne Bowes with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So we're going to talk today a little bit about...
Went back to the traditional greeting.
Yeah, I'm sorry. My creativity has gone away. You know, I have been beaten down by the forces of regularity. I don't know. Anyway, today we're going to talk about a little bit about the tax deal. I talked about the tax deal a bit last week, but it was more about some, you know, just general things surrounding it and sort of like, what the hell did you expect from Obama kind of stuff, as opposed to the deal itself. So Yvonne will probably tell us a little bit more about the actual deal this week. Then, of course, Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Yesterday, as we record this, passed the Senate, so there's some stuff to talk about there. Then maybe just a little bit more about Obama in general and how he approaches issues. We'll see how interesting that is or is not. And finally, Yvonne wanted to have some comments around Tron Legacy. And then, you know, other scattered things as we go on tangents and we happen to hit them. So, Yvonne, the tax deal. Like, yeah, basically, my comments last week were all about just, you know... yeah, of course Obama compromised. That's what he does. That's what he always said he would do. He's always been a moderate. What did the liberals expect? As opposed to anything about the deal itself. What did you think about the deal itself?
I'm surprised at the way the deal came out, okay? I'm surprised because all that we had talked about for the previous couple of months was figuring out whether we would extend the tax cuts only for the middle class or we extend the tax cuts for everybody, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we had talked about, whether that would happen or not, because the administration wanted to just extend into up to a certain income level and the Republicans wanted them for everybody. But the things in the end that were included, I'm just a little bit shocked, and I'm really, honestly, genuinely, extremely worried about one, okay? The way it was done, okay, which was the cut in the Social Security tax, okay, assessment on everybody's payroll checks, okay? I don't know how all of you, you know, looking at your payroll stubs every time, but, you know, aside from income taxes, you know, one of the big items that everybody gets deducted, okay, no matter the income level, up to you make about $110,000, I think is a threshold, it's 6.5% for Social Security. What was done, which I had argued for a while was the only way to really give a good tax break to low-income people, was to somehow make a change on that and cut it, okay, in order for people actually who make very little money to actually get more money in their paychecks. Because if you are making below $25,000 a year or $30,000 a year, you're making that kind of money, you know, you could cut tax. I mean, those people don't pay taxes right now, income taxes. However, they get almost a little over 7% taken out on the Social Security tax. And the one thing is that it's really regressive, because if you make $1 million, only your first $110,000 of it are taxed. The rest of $900,000 don't get nicked by that 7%, which really makes it a very heavily regressive tax. So in this whole thing where they're trying to make a stimulus, they're trying to put money into people's pockets, and somehow they compromised and cut the rate for everybody by 2 points. Now, which sounds great on paper. Wonderful. But here's the fucking problem about this, okay? First, they cut it for everybody by 2 points, okay? All right? So that's the one thing. The second thing is, this is the same thing as the original Bush tax cuts, for crying out loud. Fuck. You think that now 2 years down the road, you're going to be able to raise this rate again 2 points? 33%? You just gave people a fucking 33% tax cut on that. We already have a Social Security system that is short of money to pay everybody. So we don't adjust the way we're paying people Social Security. We don't make any changes on that end. And then we make this thing that is, you know, talk about a hole in the deficit the size of, I mean, unimaginable that we just added. And the thing is that the Republicans went all right along, mm-hmm, and just said, okay. And they're the ones that are complaining about how the deficit and whatever and whatnot and yabba dabba da.
Look,
the first deal that they cut is an enormous.
Yeah, before we even go there, I mean, one of the things you have to be clear on is, like, if you look at the Republicans and their history over not just the last few years, but the last few decades,
they've been deficit crazy.
Yeah, whatever they may say about deficits is complete and total bullshit. There is absolutely...
It took them not even a month. I mean, a month after the election is done... to completely show all the fucking Tea Partiers that were yelling out there, spending! Gonna throw these guys out! The first thing they do is wha-bam!
Yeah, and that's
make it even bigger! I don't know how many hundreds of billions of dollars! I'm like, what the fuck?!
And that's one of the things I was gonna mention later in some of the articles I've read back and forth about, you know, does Obama think further ahead or anything in this chess thing? And I don't know that he does. But one of the arguments there is, look, what has he done here? He's taken 5 weeks to drive a wedge between the Republicans and the Tea Partiers.
Oh, my God. I agree. Totally. If the Tea Partiers are celebrating this, I mean, then they're even crazier than I thought.
Well, yeah. The thing here is, you know, this just it does give an opportunity to right away just say, look, you know, Republicans are obviously not actually serious about any of this stuff they say. This is the kind of stuff they promised the Tea Partiers they were going to be better about. They're like, you know, hey, we went away from the reservation and we didn't pay enough attention to this and we're going to be true. And guess what?
Yep.
Fundamentally, you just have to remember, whenever you hear the Republicans saying anything about the deficit, they don't mean it. They just fundamentally don't mean it. Because, you know, there's this whole thing about, you know, listen, you know, pay attention to what people do, not what they say. And if you look at the history over the last, you know, like I said, couple decades, really, there's been not one time when Republicans have been in power where you've actually done anything about the deficit. With the exception, I guess, of the 1992 period where you had the Republican Congress and a Democratic president, or 1994, I should say. That did happen. But other than that, you know, the rest of the time, and I'm not saying the Democrats are serious about it either. Frankly, nobody in Washington actually treats this like it's a real problem.
Not particularly. So anyway, that's just the whole thing. I am honestly very troubled by how that was done. I mean, I thought that the right way, honestly, if you wanted to do that, but the right way of doing that for the Social Security tax was to actually don't start collecting the tax at income zero. Start collecting the tax on money you make above, say, $26,000 a year. And make it like, okay, if you want to like do a cutoff, then you make it that it cuts off at $125,000, whatever. So what you do is that you're giving your first $25,000 that are exempt. Then you collect from the people that can afford then you're starting to collect from the earnings that you're supposed to be able to that are affordable. And you know, it's not as regressive. But honestly, actually, you know, some people have argued that the tax should. You know, actually, instead of saying right now, because the percentage is flat, you know, you should go up to 6.5%. But what you start doing is that you start collecting maybe like it's progressive. So it's, you know, income 25 to 35,000, 1%, 2%, and you go up and maybe you get to 6.5% over, you know, $150,000 or something. But the way it's done right now, it just doesn't make any sense. I mean, it really, you know, you're really taxing everybody that makes under $110,000 a lot more money than everybody else. And, you know, and that's just somehow keeps getting lost in this entire thing. And then what we did, then what was done is just, I think it's, to a certain extent, it's certainly going to benefit a lot of people that are making very little money. I mean, they certainly haven't gotten any pay raises or even pay cuts over the last couple of years. That's going to put a nice amount of extra money in their pockets.
Yeah, and we talked a few times about, like, you know, just doing sort of the helicopter drop kind of things. And this is about as close as you're actually going to get to that.
pretty much. This is about as big a helicopter drop of money that you can do to everybody. But damn it, you know, I honestly, to me, when I saw that they did that, it was I got a little bit like, oh fuck, you know, I'm like, oh damn, this is not good.
Well, and you know? And you mentioned the punting everything off 2 years into the future,
right.
This is one of those things too, where okay, 2 years in the future, not only is you know the political climate in general not you know ever going to be one where it's going to be easy to you know let this kind of thing expire. 2 years in the future is an election year.
Yes, you know? Absolutely.
Absolutely.
Who the fuck is going to take any action on that on this damn thing? Well, I mean, you're talking about a third rail.
But here's the thing: they're going to have to.
Or worse.
They're going to
extend it.
Right. They're going to have to do something because otherwise,
nobody's going to vote to increase it.
Yeah. So you know so you know is it just going to be a pro forma? Oh, it's an election year. Let's all just kick this down the road another couple of years, Or, you know, is Obama actually going to take a stand on this in an election
season?
Well,
unless the deficit commission and the stuff that was proposed, like, that look at how that got completely, like, you know, people paid attention to it for, what, 48 hours? The deficit commission stuff? And now that's, like, gone.
Yeah.
I mean, unless he takes some serious actions on some of that stuff. I mean, a lot of the stuff had to do with shoring up security. And I'm like, right now that we just blew a fucking enormous fiscal hole on the side of the fucking Social Security ship, I mean, we just sent a torpedo up its ass. I'm like, I don't know. If we're not going to do something about it, we just made Social Security become insolvent quite a lot earlier than we had talked about before.
Well, you know, a lot of current problem solving techniques in Washington right now just consists along the lines of, as long as we can push it back a couple years, then we don't really have to think about it, and somebody else will. You know, and everybody right. sort of assumes that next time around, they're still going to be able to push it back a couple years.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, and of course, the reality is sometime the situation is going to hit a point where it's critical enough that you can't just punt. Who knows? Yeah. I don't know. Is that going to be in 2 years? Is that going to be in 50 years? I don't know. 10 years. You know, but
I don't know, but I was just not amused by the whole thing. Let's just put it to you.
So, well, before we switch topics, let me just say, a lot of the conversation around this in terms of defending it from Obama's side is basically just like, look, this is the best we could do. You know, I understand
that. But damn, I mean,
everybody, like, everybody here,
I'm still like a little bit, damn it.
Everybody here on both sides of the fence was like, this isn't really what we want. You know, but it's the best we can do because neither side was going to just let it expire and taxes go up on everybody.
I understand that, but I just okay, if it's a deal that was supposed, you know, last week I was sitting down in a negotiation with somebody, and one of the things that I said at the meeting was that the way to assure that we have a compromise is to make sure that we are both mutually miserable on the solution.
Yep.
Okay. And If the point of this was to make everybody mutually miserable on this, I must admit that this probably made everybody mutually miserable. Yeah. So if that's the indication of a good compromise, then I guess it is.
Okay. Well, on that cheery note, let's take a break, and we'll be back in a minute and talk a little bit about Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Da Okay, we're back, and I will point out once again that still nobody has answered my pleas for ideas and things to use for those breaks. Come on, people. You really don't want me to sing again.
I don't know. It was kind of entertaining, but anyway.
Okay. Anyway, don't ask, don't tell. About a week and a half ago, everybody thought it was dead. Everybody thought that there was no way this thing could pass, including you, I believe, Yvonne, you mentioned on this show.
I don't remember exactly, but I'm sure I probably did. Yeah.
And it was resurrected. Basically, the first time they were trying to pass it, they were trying to pass it as part of a larger bill. A number of Republican senators basically said, you know, we're not about to do that because they had objections to the larger bill. But then it was introduced as a standalone piece of legislation, not tied to anything else. And they got a number of Republicans to come on board. I should look up the exact list, but I don't have it in front of me. The final vote on cloture was 63. They needed 60. And then when they went to the final actual vote, two more came over, and it was 65. And so, pending President Obama's signature, unless he decides to veto it, which I kind of doubt.
Nice. Yes, that would be something.
That would be amusing. That would be really freaking amusing. I changed my mind.
I don't know. I changed my mind. Screw it. I just vetoed a fucker. I don't know. I haven't used this pen enough the last couple of years.
But he's expected to sign it into law sometime in the coming week, which will, of course, allow homosexual, gay, lesbian, et cetera, whatever words you want to use, to serve openly in the U.S. military. So, thoughts? Yvonne is speechless.
I am. I'm just a little bit like, you know, you know, I don't know. I'm looking at the thing, and I'm like, I was looking at it just, you know, as you were talking, I was trying to look at who voted for it in order to pass, okay? And they were talking about how, a very interesting thing, the Republicans had joined to pass it, okay? They went and almost all of them, let me see, were either retiring. Lame duck ones, just something like that, you know?
Or from Maine.
Or from Maine, something like that. It said, there are in the lame duck session 11 Republican senators from states that President Obama carried in 2008. Of these, 7 voted with the Democrats to repeal the policy, 3 voted against it, and also Lisa Murkowski voted for it. And I guess that they just looked at the polling and it said, you know, most people want this repealed. You know, I think it had, what was the percentages of it said, policy initiative enjoys the support of 60-70% or 80% of the public.
Right.
Yeah. You know, I mean, there are very few policies, I guess, that have that much, support.
Well, and
you know,
and the key to this though, is that this is one of those policies where the people who are against it are very against it and very vocal, you know, and that's why,
right.
And also the way that, Congress has been going in general, not just the Republicans, has been, getting more and more polarized. You know, I've seen some interesting charts, made showing sort of ideological orientation of senators, you know, and you get like, you sort of get a little chart that shows, you know, here are all the conservatives, here's all the Republicans, here are all the people who sort of are hard to classify. That hard to classify section is disappearing. And, you know, if you go back a few decades, there were a lot of people in that category where, like, if you didn't know, you might and you were only able to look at, you know, their votes and policy positions, you might have a hard time deciding, you know, is this a Republican or is this a Democrat?
That's right. You know, yep, that's true.
Now that breed is incredibly rare, and even the people, quote unquote, in the middle, you know, you can tell. Like it used to be, there was overlap. If you sort of plotted all the senators on a left-right axis, there'd be this area in the middle where you had Republicans that were left of some Democrats and Democrats that were right of some, you know, Republicans. That doesn't exist anymore. You know, and so what you get is that on both sides, the senators have to pay a lot more attention to sort of the core base kind of people who are relatively extreme in their views. Now, as you can tell from, you know, our conversation on taxes and the Tea Partiers, and, you know, even on Don't Ask, Don't Tell, you know, there was a lot of frustration over the last year that this wasn't moving. You know, the radical wings of both parties are still not satisfied with how things actually go. The Senate is still way too moderate for them. But if you look at it in raw terms, you know, both sides have to pay a lot more attention to their base than they used to, and so you get interesting effects, you know, like this, and you know, okay, so the Republicans who are voting for this are likely not to be there much longer, lots of them, because of sort of the move towards ideological purity. We'll see. Well, you know, good for them, I guess, anyway. I don't know. One of the interesting things here is that, you know, and this goes back again, I'm going to come back, I guess, to this theme a couple times, is this Obama long game thing. Is, you know, people have been criticizing Obama for the last, you know, since he became president, for why is he moving so slowly on this? Why is he defending this in court at the same time he's pushing it in Congress? Why isn't he doing this or that or that or the, and why is he setting up this stupid commission? Why doesn't he just do it? You know, things like this. And, you know, then you look at this and say, okay, look, if you hadn't set up that quote unquote stupid commission, a lot of those Republican votes wouldn't have been there. If you hadn't gone through the process of having the military do a study and decide that it would be okay and blah, 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 and take the time, you wouldn't have gotten here. You know, if you had tried to ram this through the Congress,
it would have failed miserably a year ago,
it would have failed miserably. Also, if you had tried to ram this through by executive fiat, you know, you would have had all kinds of people up in arms about, you know, the abuse of executive power. If you tried to just give up in the courts and say, oh, okay, the court said blah, you know, you'd also have a big furor. This way, the way that this actually played out, you know, basically you've taken away the ability for the Republicans to use this as an issue on judicial activism. You've taken away the ability to say, you know, but, you know, this is being forced down the military's throats against their will. And you've basically neutralized this as an issue for the future, and you've gotten stuff done. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you can look at this as, you know, what the hell was Obama doing dithering around for a year? He's such a slowpoke. Or you can say, wait a second, this was actually kind of savvy. Or maybe it was just an accident. I don't know. But
I don't think it was an accident. I mean, if you look at, I mean, my gosh, I mean, seriously, you know, a lot of people talking about how, look, you may disagree about the benefits or the results of a lot of the stuff that Obama has done in the first 2 years of administration, but I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just let's see, healthcare, financial reform, stimulus package, don't ask, don't tell, a START treaty, the tax. I don't know. I'm like, how many freaking things have actually been like? If you remember, what did Congress pass before 2008, the previous 4 years? Remember how we talked about yeah, exactly.
I'm sure there was stuff.
Not much. I mean, that was one of the key complaints that everybody had. I mean, the Congress just did not take up any major legislation in the second half of Bush's term that actually got through. They tried to do Social Security reform. That imploded. They tried to do the immigration reform. That self-destructed. Those are the two major ones that I remember. None of them went anywhere. You know, and then the only one that happened was when the, you know, he had the little, you know, iPod stimulus package when he gave sent everybody checks for $200 home. Or some people got a quarter, but, you know, that's another story. And then, you know, and then the at the end, TARP. You know, that's it. So I'm just a little bit like, I think that people's expectations of what a person, anybody in that position can do are just wildly unrealistic for most people. I guess that's my
perspective. What, you mean the president can't make a magic wand and solve all the problems in the world?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, yeah, I mean, and everybody comes in and just talks about that and, like, criticizes him, like, well, you know, I still don't have a job. I'm like, what the fuck is he supposed to do? You know? I mean, has he done a number of actions to try to stimulate the economy, move it, get businesses investing, get through this and that? Yes. Is that going to translate directly into everybody all of a sudden magically getting a job? No. But, you know, that's how a lot of people measure it. And, you know, it's like, I don't know. It's just, I guess that's what I see. I mean, you know, we're coming off probably the worst recession we've had since the Great Depression. And, you know, the fact that there aren't breadlines and people are like, you know, unemployment did not get over 10%, I think is pretty much, I mean, I'd say that's not too shabby. Now, the problem that we got is that we still got a lot of unfinished business, and we put ourselves in a situation where if we don't take action, I mean, I'm worried. I really am worried. And I don't know, well, like the tax bill just didn't feel all warm and fuzzy right now.
And one of the things that people have been talking about, yeah, well, we'll see what happens in January once we have a Republican Congress as well, House, I should say. Does Obama's mode of governing change? How is he able to work in that changed environment? I mean, it's not like he had a clear shot with, you know, oh, Democrats were in the House, so he could do whatever he wanted.
No, because a lot of them, because a good portion of the Democrats anyway were pretty conservative anyway, and they weren't.
And most of those Democrats lost, by the way. You know, like,
and most of those Democrats even lost anyway.
I mean, as we said, the middle is thinning out, and I was talking about the Senate, but it's true in the House as well. You know, that sort of middle ground is going away.
Right.
And, you know, but what will be the mode of operation next year? Is Obama going to double down on, hey, let's figure out what we can actually get done that the Republicans agree with, and we can get through in a bipartisan way? I mean, like, you mentioned the tax deal in terms of, you know, it had a lot of uproar in terms of, you know, liberal Democrats being very, very unhappy about it. But, you know, it ended up passing by huge margins, you know, in the Congress. You know, so one way or another, Obama got probably the biggest levels of support he got on that bill on any other piece of significant legislation of his presidency so far.
That's right.
I mean, everything else, you know, that's of significance has been sort of the just barely over 50% variety. This was much more than that, you know, and we'll see. Like, so he has a couple options, you know, continue doubling down on trying to figure out what he can get done that gets that kind of support where the Republicans have to be on board as well and sort of subvert that, or become, say, you know, look, the Republicans are going to be obstructionist. I realize they're going to be obstructionist. So I'm not even going to try getting things done in the Congress. I'm going to try to get things done I can do without Congress. I don't know where that'll go. I think, frankly, the smart thing for him to do is, yeah, the Republicans have stated their goal is to obstruct everything, and their primary goal is to get Obama out of the White House in 2012.
Well, they certainly collapsed, like, quite quickly on that. It didn't take them a month.
Well, right. And I think the biggest way to subvert that is, I mean, actually work with them. You know?
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And then, you know, when the Republicans get up to try to say all the bad things Obama's done, he'll be either like, well, but you voted for that too.
Yeah, I know.
Or it'll be like, they can't be like, I don't know. They either stopped or, okay, it's time for a break.
It's time for a break.
It's time for a break. Right, my brain is melting. And we already
we'll put some ice on it. Okay, and we'll take a break. There we go.
Yeah, a big spike of ice straight through my cerebrum. Okay.
Oh gosh. Okay.
Okay.
That wasn't a good image. Okay.
Oh no, sorry. But it would melt though, and then there'd be a hole.
Yeah. Okay. All
right. Okay, we'll be right back after this break. This will be the poem of the week. Enjoy your poem. We will be right back.
This is the Curmudgeon's Corner Poem of the Week, brought to you by No-Tell Motel.
To live in the hair of Sargasso Sea, by J.P. Dancing Bear, after Jake Yerkes, the Sargass Sea Bishop. You make use of the things stuck with you, a pearl of wisdom you cannot remember from where, a faded relative from dry land, or impossible fable of an action figure. You've made a lifetime of scraps into a comfortable living space. Ship planks you've always imagined were once a Spanish galleon, framing the deep green twilight mist. If not for the broken clock and a pointless sundial, you would not recall the notion of time. An old captain's spyglass reveals no ships off the port or bow. New rips in the sail with its clear emblem of futility. Another black fin slices a narrow path through hair you will neither steer to nor follow. Approaching night, and already the stars call out to one another like an oncoming downpour of toads. The kettles and teapots are low of rain. You have a vague notion of some song once chanted that would split the sky into a downpour, some other religion than your own. Lightning flashing over the boiling triangled sea, but it is as half-hearted as a torn map. You might need to lie down for a spell to work out what is needed and what is written in the key of desire. Another slow wave rolls under and a lullaby voice is born. Sleep comes with a green blanket of comfort. Everything has been provided for by this god of static seas.
For more like this, go to notellmotel.org with a new poet each week and a new poem every weekday.
Okay. As Yvonne coughs, we are back from your poem of the week, but we've had some adventures in the meantime. Yvonne, this is actually the first time this has happened in like a long time. So Yvonne and I recorded a segment. We talked about Tron Legacy a little bit, Yvonne, basically about how expectations were so high, but kind of like the first movie, you know, there's really a core audience that would really like this kind of thing, and everybody else is probably going to be like, eh, at best. Anyway, but then my power went out. My power went out at the house, the computer, the internet, everything, poof! And it went out for like 10 seconds, then it came on for 1 second, then it went out again. And then I'm calling up Yvonne saying, I'm sorry, my power went out, blah, 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 blah. And then while I'm talking to him, the power comes back on again.
And then, of course, he's like, you know, he's my cell phone's ringing. And many times when we're doing the show, my cell phone rings. And I'm like, I try to ignore the phone, obviously, because I'm doing the show. And then I'm like, and of course, Sam's not coming back on. So I go and I decide to look at the phone. And actually, at the same time, my brother also calls. So I have two straight calls. So I thought it was the same person calling twice. And I'm like, what the hell's going on? So I go grab the phone. And then I see that Sam had called. And I'm like, okay, well, that can't be good. You know, if he's called me on the phone. So anyway.
So anyway, Yvonne's asking me why I don't have a UPS.
Yes, because I do.
Well, you know, this is something I have never, I've never even really thought about investing in because, you know, power, you know, in the last 24 hours, I had mentioned to Yvonne, this happened like yesterday too. The power was out for like half an hour, but it was in the middle of the night. You know, this very rarely happens here. You know, and usually, like, this is my home computer. Like, what am I going to lose, really? It's, you know, I've got it backed up for Time Machine. I got this and that, you know, and I'm... the chances of something significant being lost in a power outage are not that high. And so it just never seemed worth it. Now, like, I know where you are in Florida, you get your thunderstorms all the time, and you probably have power outages every week. You know, I don't know.
Maybe not every week, but they happen occasionally. And the one thing is, well, my thing about it is that I'm like, you know, they happen at the moments that you least want them to happen.
That is true.
You know what? You get one of those, and you get what just happened right now, and just because the power flickered for about 30 seconds, you know, a minute or so, and you're recording something, or you are making a file, or you are sending something to the internet, or you're doing something, no. Not the moment to be losing
power. I went and looked, and I was very hopeful, because, like, you know, way back in the early days of this podcast, we use a different method of recording it, and all the time, if there was a crash or something interrupted, we would lose stuff, and it happened all the time. With this new method, like, I can see the file getting bigger on the disk as we talk. Like, this segment is now up to 5.1 megabytes, and in a few seconds, it'll be a little bit larger. The previous segment was up to 8.4 megabytes. I've got an 8.4 megabyte MOV file sitting on my disk that says it's our last segment we record. But I try to open it, and so far everything I've tried to open it says, you know, nothing valid in this file, you know, because it got interrupted by a power outage. So you're right. It would have at the very least saved this show.
Yep.
You know, but, you know, so now everyone knows what to get me for Christmas.
So, okay, there you go. So bottom line. So getting back to the movie for a little bit.
Yes. You and your wife saw Tron. She was not impressed.
It's just that, like like I tried to say earlier until I got, you know.
Erased.
It's just erased. The movie, like the original one, really appealed to a certain very small section. I mean, I liked the first movie. But I know I'm not stupid and could see how most people would not. I mean, I was a kid who loved computers, and like seeing this movie with all the cool technology they showed, and like, you know, this touchscreen computer. My God, if you think about it right now, it looks like a freaking iPad, what they were using over there, for crying out loud, in the original Tron. I mean, with a little touchscreen keyboard and the whole thing and the speaking computer and the whole, I mean, it was cool. But I could see how most people would not like this.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Okay, so let me ask. You mentioned in the erased part of this show that, you know, there was actually, like, a little bit of booing at the end of the movie.
Yes, there was!
Having said what you've said about the limited number of people liking it, given that you liked the first one, did you like this one?
I did like this one.
Okay.
I did. I mean, you know, am I going to say it was the most incredible movie ever? No. But I did like it, okay? And, you know...
Is it one of these things where you just have to recognize it for what it is, which is sort of a showcase of graphics and a little bit of action, and
And a little bit of nostalgia, too, you know? I mean, shit. I mean, you know, watch that movie. I was like, you know, was it 11? I mean, I don't know. I think it's a little bit of that, too. I mean, you know, it reminds me when I, you know, shit, I don't know. It reminds me of my first little computer. I remember the computer that I had at the time when that movie came out. I was an Atari 1200 XL. Okay. All right.
Okay.
And I believe, you know, I don't know. There was a couple of different, like, computer graphics games that I played and some of the stuff and whatever. And I, you know, I tried to program as best as I could. And it's like seeing these guys program and making games was just kind of cool. You know, I don't know. I like that stuff. I don't program anymore. I got bored with it. But, you know, but anyway, you know. So I guess, yeah. I mean, and the movie had some pretty exciting scenes, I thought, and there were some nice stuff. But you know, I could see how most people, this thing would just go right over their head.
Yeah, I imagine I'll probably see it sometime in the next couple of weeks. This is the kind of movie that we have difficulty with at this time. Well, I mean, because of, you know, Brandy, myself, and Amy all want to see this. But we have to work out.
But have they seen the first one?
Yes, we all watched it together a couple months ago.
What do they think about the first one?
They actually liked it.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that's good. Okay.
So.
All right. Then they probably will like this one if they like the
first. Amy's all geeked out about the new one. So, you know, but we just have to arrange a time, like, because we haven't really done the babysitter thing that much. And, you know, I'm not sure how comfortable Brandy is with that at the moment, because we don't have the sort of network of friends to get, like, someone we trust. So it's always a matter of, like, two of us have to go. And then the third, and when there's a movie that all three of us want to see, then that's always a problem. And then we have to switch around or something. But anyway, we'll work it out. My mom's coming between Christmas and New Year's, so maybe we'll do it then. You know, but anyway, we'll see it soon. I'm sure it's like you said, it's the kind of thing where as long as you have the right expectations going in, it's probably just fine. But if you're thinking it's going to be more than it is, then you're so far.
And that's the problem. I think a lot of people think that this movie is like I don't know. Think about some action. I don't know. Think whatchamacallit. That's that Angelina Jolie movie, like Tomb Raider or something like that, you know? And maybe they're expecting that, and I'm like, you know, if you're going in with that thinking, boy, you're going to be really disappointed.
So let me mention a couple things while we're talking about movies. I was just thinking, so far of sort of reviews I've read of this movie, the only one that I've read that was positive was one in Wired magazine from Tron Guy, the guy who got famous on the internet for dressing up in a Tron costume.
Right.
You know, everyone else has sort of been like, eh. But a couple other movie thoughts, and then I'll and then we can, I guess, just wrap it up. Hi, Alex. Alex is bringing me all the pens in my office. Anyway, I just wanted to point out one review that I thought was hilarious for a different movie. IO9.com reviewed yesterday the Yogi Bear movie.
Okay.
Their review. Okay. The title of the blog post is "In Yogi Bear, Jellystone Park is District 9 for Bears." You know, and look. Here's the thing about this review. It's just very tongue in cheek and sort of Fox academic. It's like, you know, here's the first sentence. Yogi Bear is not a kid's movie. It is a bleak, futurist parable about humanity's inability to accept a non-human sapience. It is also about a bear who wears a hat.
Okay.
So I just want to point people towards this review. It's freaking hilarious. I'm not going to read much more of it because it's long.
Where is it at again?
IO9.com. It was posted on Saturday, December 18th. The title is "In Yogi Bear, Jellystone Park is District 9.
Okay.
Yeah, just
I found it. Okay.
It's a hilarious review of the movie. This is probably a movie I'm not going to see. I'll also, of course, point people to, if anybody has not yet seen the viral video of Boo Boo killing Yogi, go look for that as well.
Oh, God.
Just search for the most viewed things on YouTube. Just go to YouTube and look at the most viewed. If you do it in the next couple weeks, it'll probably be there. Or search for Yogi Bear Boo Boo Kill or something. You know, it's basically a dead on take on the animation on the new movie, but it's a recreation of a scene from a Brad Pitt movie, Western, about the killing of Jesse James or something like that. Anyway, it's kind of funny too. And then one last thing to end up, and then we can wrap up, which is I just saw come across my wire, my Google Reader, an alert, and who is this from? Real quick, where did I see this? Let me look this up. It's a YouTube link, which I haven't actually played the video yet. Come on. I want to see where it's from. I actually saw it on the blog Nito Bambino. But basically, the long and short of it is there's a new alert from a release from WikiLeaks that WikiLeaks has now released Santa's Naughty and Nice list.
Oh, wow.
So, you know.
Wow. Well, that's so, a...
Whatever they may have done before, I think everybody must agree this is really a low blow.
Oh, this is shocking. This is a shocking revelation. Shocking. Okay, well.
So anyway.
All right, then. On that note.
Between now and our next show, there'll be the Christmas holiday. Obviously, I guess the Hanukkah holidays are already over. And Ramadan or whatever was really early this year, I think. I don't know. So anyway, but, you know, so Merry Christmas to those of you who do Christmas, you know, and enjoy however you happen to deal with such things, whether it's presents or something else. We don't have our tree yet. We're in the process of doing a massive house cleaning thing, and then we're going to go get the tree and set all that up. And we're all about the materialistic Christmas that's all about the damn presents. So, you know.
A real or a fake tree?
Real tree. We generally get a real tree. I've never liked the fake trees. On the other hand, I don't like the whole, like, killing a tree thing. We're going to kill a tree this year anyway, or we're going to buy a tree that's already been chopped down. But what I have noticed is there are a couple places now who are doing a thing where they rent you a live tree that they actually bring to you in a pot. So it's still in the ground with its roots.
Oh, and then they can plant it back.
And then they take it back from you, like, right after Christmas, and they plant it back. Yeah, so that you don't actually have to kill the tree.
I like that concept.
I like that concept a lot. And, like, we looked into it, and first of all, it's more expensive than the usual way you do it.
Oh, obviously, of course. Obviously. Yeah.
Also, it appears to be, like, somewhat of a pain in the ass to, like, organize it. But we're not doing it this year. I think we'll think about it again next year, because I really do like the concept. I've also tried a few years to, like, actually buy a live tree, and then after the holiday is over, plant it in the backyard or something.
It doesn't work too well. Now, you've got no root system on it.
Well, no. If you buy a real live tree, like not the kind they've chopped down. The kind that's in a pot, you know. I'm basically, let's put it this way. I'm not a green thumb. Things I plant in the ground tend to die. You know, so the tree will last a little bit longer than it would if you chopped it down for a Christmas tree. But usually when I've done these things, they've lasted a few months and then they've given up the ghost. But I've got one dead one in the backyard right now that I've never unplanted, but you know.
I do have, by the way.
When I've done this before, I haven't gotten really huge ones. I've gotten like relatively small, like 3 foot tall trees or something.
Well, a number of years ago, I decided to get an artificial tree, and yep. I got a very nice artificial tree. It cost several hundred dollars. Okay, but it looks like a real tree. Okay, unless you really come up very close to it and touch it, you can't tell that it's a fake tree. And as a matter of fact, it comes with a bottle of spray. Okay, that you spray to make it smell like pine.
Right.
Because that's a giveaway. But you actually look at it; it is such a good fake, you know, that it looks like a real tree. And so I've settled with that, and I've been quite happy with it for the last. It's 5 years now that I've had it, and
I mean, a lot of people are really happy with artificial trees, and I guess I should be too. I don't know. It's like technology, and one thing I've seen a couple times in stores that I thought would be really cool for home, but of course no one will ever agree with, is hanging the tree upside down from the ceiling.
No. You ain't getting away with that one. All right. Okay. And on that note, okay,
Christmas. Use a motor to make it spin.
Isn't that like kind of like an honor anarchy thing? Like when you hang the flag upside down or something? I don't know. One of those things.
Maybe.
Anyway,
that's it for the show. Thank you all for joining us. Sorry we lost most of Yvonne's original comments about Tron. You know, you get the diminished second version. But, you know, whatever. You got the point. Alex is done too.
Go, Alex.
So, he's there just doing pretty good. He's wandering around my office entertaining himself. Undoubtedly with things that are dangerous, but you know. Thanks for joining us, everybody. As usual, send me comments, questions, thoughts. Ablesme@ablesme.com. That's ABULSME. Otherwise, tell your friends to listen. Tune in again next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye, Alex.
Bye, Yvonne.